Ladies and gentlemen, Kipling's oft-repeated phrase, East is east and west is west and never the twain shall meet, now belongs to the classics. Because today we know that through transportation and communication, all peoples belong to one world. NBC is happy to present to you a man who is to serve on that mythical frontier between East and West, who, through education, will reduce invisible barriers of ignorance and intolerance. He is Dr. Stephen B. L. Penrose, President-elect of the American University at Beirut, Lebanon, and guest speaker in Portland, Oregon, before the annual convention of the General Federation of Women's Clubs. He will be interviewed by that well-known writer and radio commentator, George Murad, author of Behind the Iron Curtain. Both gentlemen will be introduced to you by General Federation President, Mrs. J.L. Blair Buck, herself a dynamic leader, world traveler, ardent supporter of the Marshall Plan, now known as ECA. Her organization has as its high priority the promotion of international understanding through education and legislation. Mrs. Buck.
The General Federation of Women's Clubs, with its 4 million members in America and rapidly growing list of foreign clubs, stands firmly behind the United Nations and all its many agencies devoted to peace building. To that end, we have an official member on the United States Commission for UNESCO and an observer at Lake Success. We believe that education must play a vital role in international affairs. The eyes of the world are turned to the East. We feel singularly fortunate to have as one of our key speakers, Dr. Penrose, who leaves soon for Lebanon to take up his duties, and through the National Broadcasting Company to share him with you listeners. We are glad, too, that Mr. George Murad will carry on this discussion. I present these distinguished gentlemen.
Dr. Penrose, as the worthy successor to the famous Dr. Bayard Dodge of the American University in Beirut, Syria, you are in a very good position to tell us, first of all, something about the pattern of American education throughout the Middle East through these many American universities.
Mr. Murad, there have been now for more than 80 years American institutions of higher learning scattered about through the Near East. The oldest of these is Robert College in Istanbul, Turkey. Associated with Robert College in Istanbul is the Women's College of Istanbul, an institution for women in Turkey. There is in Greece, Athens College. There is in Sofia, now not operating because it's behind the Iron Curtain, the American College of Sofia. At Beirut, there is the American University of Beirut and associated with it, International College, which does its junior college work. And there is the American School for Boys in Baghdad. All of these institutions belong to the Near East College Association, which has united them for purposes of administrative efficiency in a single New York office.
I remember one time traveling from Cairo to Alexandria, Dr. Penrose, that an Englishman remarked to me upon the a very cheerful fact that of all the nations of the world, only America had apparently produced people who were willing to give their private fortunes to the diffusion of education around the world without any political strings attached. That has been the case with these various universities, which are now supported through public donations in the United States. Isn't that so?
That is definitely so. All of them are privately endowed institutions, the money having come from free voluntary gifts by American citizens. They have been so long established also in the Near East that it is well known that they have no political affiliations or intent. It's rather an unusual thing for institutions known to be associated with a country not to have such a political intent.
Well, now, these universities, having been established for a period of 50 or 60 years, by this time, you should be able to see some of the positive results throughout all the Arab countries, and, of course, Lebanon, a Christian country. What are some of those results, so far as you can see, or the ones that you might mention?
Well, of course, the greatest result which any educational institution can produce is its students and its graduates. I can speak best, perhaps, for the American University of Beirut because I know it better. For example, it had a number of its graduates representing the countries associated with it at the United Nations Charter Conference in San Francisco. There were, for example, 29 representatives of the Near East colleges at that conference. At the present time, Dr. Charles Malik, who is president of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, is a graduate of the American University of Beirut, is at present professor of philosophy on leave, and is actually minister of Lebanon to the United States in addition to his duties at the United Nations. The other Arab representatives at the United Nations are, curiously enough, all of them either former students or graduates of the American University of Beirut. The influence of those institutions in the Near East has been tremendous in the production of leadership for a group of new countries which have just recently broken away either from the shackles of foreign domination or from custom and tradition.
The American University in Beirut specializes in medicine, doesn't it? And Roberts College specializes in engineering?
That is right. On the professional level, that is so.
Well, it's very hard to tell, Dr. Penrose, in these very anxious days in the Middle East, where education ends and where political facts begin. I wonder if you'd say something about the trend of political events and American foreign policy in the Middle East, so far as you can see them at this moment.
Well, unfortunately, I'm unable to give a very optimistic account. I think that the possibilities are that the policy, if it can be called a policy, which the United States is at present following with regard to the Middle East, may make it very difficult indeed for us to continue the educational influence successfully, which we have heretofore carried on.
Well, have you been following these various discussions in the United Nations since that momentous occasion of November 29th, when partition was voted by a majority of the United Nations and apparently was made the international law of the land concerning what is now Israel?
Yes, I have been following them very closely because, of course, they affect our work very, very definitely.
And you were in New York the other day, I suppose, when President Truman made this surprise announcement of the recognition of the State of Israel.
I was, and I was able to see at first hand what the effect of it was upon the representatives of the Arab nations.
And what was that effect?
They were dismayed, disillusioned, and felt that they were betrayed. Betrayed because they had been negotiating in perfectly good faith with the United States delegation at the United Nations in order to work out a truce for Palestine. At the moment when those negotiations were approaching success, the announcement of President Truman's recognition of Israel broke upon them with bomb-like suddenness. It also broke upon the American delegation to the United Nations with equal suddenness.
They were not informed.
They were not informed.
Well, it seems to me that one thing very patently is arising out of all of this, and that is a cohesion among the Arab states that has never before existed. That probably will have a long-range effect as well as the immediate effect of welding them together for purposes of war, wouldn't you think?
That is probably true. It is always easier to get people to unite against something than it is in favor of something constructive. It is certainly true that the Zionist operations in Palestine have united the Arab world and the Muslim world in a way which probably could not have been expected for generations to come.
Well, that's not entirely a bad thing, is it, in the long-range sense that may possibly lift some of the peoples of the Middle East out of their stage of feudalism to a consciousness of nationalism, and by that, perhaps certain other material advances.
Not necessarily, Mr. Murad. I'm afraid that that is not so. I'm afraid that the development of strong nationalism, even the cohesion of those states, if it is done in a spirit of bitter enmity toward the Western world, as is presently happening, would be one of the most unfortunate developments which we could look forward to in years. We need the Middle East. The United States needs it. It is an area in which the political orientation has not yet been definitely set. and in this world which is cut in two at the present moment, an area as large as that, populated by nearly 300 million people, is not a group upon whom we should lightly turn our backs.
Well, Dr. Penrose, a short while ago, when they were proposing a mediation group for the war in Palestine, they called the United Nations delegates the Five Lonely Pilgrims. It seems to me that going out to Beirut and Lebanon at a time like this, that you are somewhat in the position of being the one lonely Yankee pilgrim.
Well, that may very definitely be true. It remains to be seen what the effect upon the work of these colleges will be due to the developments of American foreign policy. I cannot anticipate that entirely.
Well, I believe you said when we were speaking a little earlier, Dr. Penrose, that the question of a solution in Palestine is probably going to depend upon what the great powers individually want in the Middle East. I wonder if we could go into that for a few moments to see what the solution might be or if there is a solution.
Mr. Murad, I think that the answer to that is that each of the great powers has its own interests. I think they are in many regards material interests. And I think there will be no solution to the situation in the Middle East until the United States and other members of the United Nations begin to function in terms of principle rather than in terms of expediency.
Well, I wonder if we might examine individually the policies or the desires of some of these nations concerned. In the first place, it's fairly evident that Great Britain is supporting the Arab League and intends to support the Arab League as the basis of her foreign policy. What, on the other hand, may be the intentions of the United States on the one hand and Russia on the other?
As regards the intentions of the United States, I can't say, Mr. Murad. I'm inclined to think that now, in view of our past history, if we stated what our policy was to be, no one would know whether we could be believed or not. So far as Russia is concerned, I think it is fairly simple that Russia would like to see chaos established in the Middle East and will do everything possible to do so. It would be to our definite disadvantage if she succeeded.
Well, do you take it that Russia is still sitting fairly well on the sidelines so that she is not thoroughly committed herself in the Middle East, that she might at the last moment make a decision which would range her upon the side of the Arab world?
Russia has been enabled to sit on the sidelines because the United States has always run with her ball for her. In this last action, I feel that in the attempt to beat Russia to the punch in recognizing the state of Israel, we have had exactly the same effect as if we had beaten her to a punch upon our own jaw.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Stephen Penrose. You've been listening to an interview with Dr. Stephen Penrose, president-elect of the American University in Beirut, Syria.
Thank you, Dr. Penrose and George Murad. Today from KGW, Portland, Oregon, you have heard a discussion on American policy in the Middle East. Dr. Stephen B.L. Penrose, president-elect of the American University at Beirut, Lebanon, is a speaker before the annual convention of the General Federation of Women's Clubs. He was introduced by its president, Mrs. J.L. Blair Buck, and interviewed by George Murad, author of Behind the Iron Curtain. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.